The next case on the panel's argument calendar this morning is In Re Estate of Robert C. Murray, case number 63284. Mr. Graham, are you ready to proceed? All right.
If it pleases the court, we'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this is an interesting case. An action was commenced under Title 12 of intestacy. We had a gentleman by the name of Robert Murray who died. And the assertion of the appellants is that he had 3 stepchildren. And in Title 12, it's very clear, the stepchildren are not included in intestacy. In other words, they do not inherit. The intention of Title 12 is very clear. The description of child expressly denies stepchildren from taking. As this matter has developed, the courts underneath looked at 3 factors. One, whether or not the sister of Robert Murray, who would otherwise inherit, had standing to contest paternity at this late in the game. And if she had standing, whether or not she exercised it too late. Subsequent to that, then we addressed the full faith and credit issue of the delayed birth certificate. The facts here are interesting. Mr. Murray and Mrs. Murray met, according to the witnesses, eyewitnesses that are still alive, met in high school. At the time that they married, Mrs. Murray already had 3 children. Subsequent to the marriage, Ms. Murray went to an official officer of the state of Arkansas and obtained what we call a delayed birth certificate for 2 of the children. The delayed birth certificate is essentially an attestation of the mother that the father was in fact the person who she was married to. Testimony, however, contradicts that, indicating that the parties had not even met at the time that these children were conceived and born.
But counsel, doesn't the state where that certificate was issued have a procedure and have the various, I guess, offers of proof, so to speak, placed under seal in that state?
Well, this is an interesting point, Your Honor, because we asked for the evidence. In fact, the Arkansas law does not look like it was followed.
Well, that's partially why you're here, but because pursuant to the Arkansas law, there's an issue within the issue of standing to get to that information.
Well, the clerk of the court indicated that the only thing in the file was the delayed birth certificate. Arkansas law requires that there be other proffers of evidence. There were no other proffers of evidence. Again, the reason why we wanted to have an evidentiary hearing to establish that the only thing that existed was the attestation of the mother without any notice to the person that she had married.
Mr. Graham, isn't there a threshold question? I find this case interesting because it raises the issue about whether this issue is resolved under Nevada's probate code or Nevada's Parentage Act. And isn't that the threshold question that this court must address before one gets into all of the details about what the clerk had or didn't have or what birth certificate showed or didn't show? I mean, the reason this matter is on for oral argument is to resolve an important legal question. So maybe you could share with us which of these 2 acts you think this court should adopt and why.
Well, under the Washaw broadcasting case, we need to interpret the statutes in a way that makes sense. And if we fairly read Title 11, what we read is a support and a concern about supporting children. Let's identify the parents so these children can be raised with the support that they need. A fair reading of that statute sees 126 under Title 11 as being comprehensively about raising children and supporting them. Title 12 is estates and deceased persons. In Title 12, we recognize that the person who might be the most knowledgeable about this is, in fact, deceased. And then we have an exclusion of stepchildren very specifically provided under Title 12.
Don't we have to reconcile these statutes and read them in a harmonious way? That is to say, would seem inconsistent that under the probate code we would say that this child is not a child of Mr. Murray's, but under the Parentage Act is a child of Mr. Murray's. I don't think we can arrive at those different results, can we?
So if we can discuss how they can be seen harmoniously.
How would we?
So under 126.071(1), sub 1, it talks about third parties being able to bring a contest. For the purposes of parentage and support, you may want to exclude some people. But under the estate provisions, you automatically have to give standing to parties who would otherwise inherit and who have a right to challenge. That's what the statute's all about. Then we go to the next layer. So we would assert that they would be third parties. Then we go to the question of whether or not there is a statute of limitations. Well, the first fairness issue that must be addressed is whether the father even knew that there was such a document in existence. There's no acknowledgement by the father anywhere, no evidence that can be shown other than he believed that they were his stepchildren. No acknowledgement such as an adoption where you terminate one parent in favor of another.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Graham. Would the statute of limitations provision in the Parentage Act preclude the father from asserting or denying Joyce's status as a daughter after this period of time? Setting aside for the moment his death, he's still alive, but we're still this long into his life. Would he be precluded from challenging Joyce as his daughter at this stage under the statute of limitations provision of the Parentage Act?
Well, there is, in fact, a threshold question that's more important. Did he know? And that is a big question because there's nothing in the record that shows that
Does the statute of limitations provision require knowledge?
I would assume that if
you're simply asking whether or not that statute bars his ability to challenge it at this stage.
My assertion is if he were alive and he knew at the time, going back many, many years, and he did not contest it, and he knew about the document at that time, my argument would be, yes, it would preclude him because he had knowledge. But when he did not have knowledge, it's another question. You have a document that he did not even know existed.
Is there any evidence in the record that he didn't?
Yes. In fact, the evidence indicates two things. One, that they did not meet until much later. So the concept amongst the family, sisters, brothers, cousins, etc., was that these were stepchildren. In fact, this action was brought with the belief that there were only stepchildren. This document of the delayed birth certificate arose much later. In fact, it's a question as to whether it even arose at the time that he was still living. So knowledge is an important factor.
Well, but Section 1 of 126.081 doesn't talk about knowledge. It simply says an action brought under this chapter to declare the existence or non-existence of the father and child relationship is not barred until 3 years after the child reaches the age of majority. And clearly Joyce was way past that time.
If we continue reading that section, we see that there is an acknowledgement by the legislature that Title 12 should be treated differently. If we look under subsection 2, we see that that heirship question of a child asserting themselves as an heir is in fact addressed and says we don't want to touch Title 12.
Counsel, you just made a statement about, well, questioning when this delayed certificate was issued, but yet what is in the record is there was a 1952 attempt to notarize a document, and even though the parties are no longer disputing whether it's good or not based upon intention, 52 rings the bell, and now we're into 2008. So it's been around, that document's been around for quite a while. So it's not just something that popped up 2 days ago.
But
so that characterization is kind of a misrepresentation.
But it's not a document that's published. It's not a document that one, having stepchildren, would pursue. If even today, if a stepchild and a marriage occurs.
I understand that, but your characterization of it bothered me because you acted like it just popped up yesterday, and that's not the case.
Well, the knowledge of the document popped up yesterday. In other words, we were looking at
your assertion in terms of the folks you're representing.
The recent discovery of the document is what has now become knowledgeable. It's not a document that's published for.
Was there a necessity for the document before?
There was no necessity on behalf of the father.
And that's kind of my point.
Right.
You're acting as if it should have been placed well, the flagpole and everything else, and that's not necessarily the case until we have an event that requires that kind of issue to be brought forward.
Title 12 is concerned about getting property to blood relatives or adopted children.
I guess I'm in looking at this, Minnesota makes a point, and it's like, when you've had this and you've had this validity established some 50 years ago and it's under the parentage, it's like, why are we here now? Why are we contesting this except for this is a probate issue?
Well,
like, how does that probate issue, that's just as hard as you started with, square against the issue of family and birth?
I think we ultimately have to see that the chapters are not well integrated, because we have an exclusion of stepchildren in Chapter 12, or in Title 12. We have a very specific exclusion of stepchildren. The legislature does not want stepchildren.
If they are, in fact, stepchildren, we don't start with the presumption that they are, only that they're alleged in this case.
And this was opened not under Title 11. This was opened up under Title 12. When we talk about the statute of limitations, it clearly states, for those cases opened up under Title 11, we are opening this matter up in Title 12, and it has express exclusion of stepchildren.
And how do we deal with the full faith and credit of the document that's been tendered as kind of a starting point in...
Going now to the third point, which is a full faith and credit. I think the law is clear. The Ninth Circuit has spoken multiple times. In fact, last night I was doing research and they reaffirmed it in 2013. Under Corpus Juris Secundum, 766 sub B, that's the law. The law is, it comes in as a prima facie, it comes in as a presumption, but that presumption is not definitive. That can be overcome. In fact, the cases that are cited are about individuals asserting birth in the United States and overwhelming evidence showing that, in fact, they were not born here. So we're going to see more and more of these types of cases now because we have illegal immigration, we have a graying population. These issues of birth certificates are going to be important.
But that's not the case in front of us today. So that argument is not in play for this particular matter.
For full faith and credit, it is, Your Honor. For full faith
and
credit.
But in this particular case, counsel, is that not correct?
The presumption that it is prima facie is a presumption that can be overcome.
That's correct.
Any other questions at this point, Your Honor?
No, Mr. Graham, I appreciate your comments. All right. Ms. Denton?
I'm going to please the court. I'm Alice Denton, and my co-counsel, Jerry and Joe, have the pleasure of representing respondent Joyce Marie Slaughter. Robert was not a man whose name accidentally appeared on the birth certificate of Joyce. Robert is the only father that Joyce has had for the 62 years of her life. This really is a paternity case, an attempt by siblings to bastardize and illegitimize Joyce, seeking not only to deprive her of the estate of her parents, Robert and Margaret Murray, but to deprive her of her father. This is a case involving equity, justice, and public policy. As Mr. Graham stated, Joyce was born in Arkansas. She was born in a small town. She was born at home. No birth certificate was issued at that time. Joyce's mother was 19 at the time of her birth, and she was unmarried. Against the wishes of the Murray family, in 1951, Robert went and married the love of his life, Margaret. A year later, the couple went to the Arkansas Bureau of Vital Statistics and a delayed birth certificate was issued showing Robert to be the father.
Is that, my understanding was his name does not appear on the document.
On the birth certificate? Robert Murray's name does appear on the birth certificate, on the delayed birth certificate. And the reason that we know that Mr. Murray had to have participated in obtaining the birth certificate in which he is identified as the father is because under Arkansas law at that time, if a child was born out of wedlock, the only way that a father's name could be put on the certificate was through legitimization through marriage, acknowledgement of paternity, or adoption. Over 62 years have passed, and although the state of Arkansas cannot find those papers had to have existed because Arkansas could not have issued the birth certificate without them. After the marriage, the Murray family still despised Margaret. And in 1953, Robert picked up Margaret and the children and moved to Las Vegas.
Ms. Denton, I want to interrupt you, as I did Mr. Graham. Again, this case is an important factor in deciding this case, is whether we look at the intestacy provisions under the probate code or whether we decide this case under the Parentage Act. What is your argument with respect to which of the two codes apply and how they should be analyzed in this case?
Your Honor, there are many bases for applying 126 here. First of all, we have statutory intent. NRS 126.011, entitled Applicability of Chapter, states, this chapter, quote, applies to all persons, no matter when born. Furthermore, in 126.021, subsection 3, the parent-child relationship is established, in which it is defined as the legal relationship between a child and his and her natural parents, which imposes rights, duties, privileges, and obligations. Inheritance is a right. The case law in the state of Nevada, St. Mary versus Damon and Love versus Love, in 2013, this court stated in St. Mary versus Damon, paternity may be established in a variety of ways, including presumptions based on marriage and cohabitation, NRS 126.0511A through C, presumptions based on receiving the child into the home and holding oneself out as their parents, NRS 126.1D, genetic testing, 126.0512, and a voluntary acknowledgement, NRS 126.053. Hence, a determination of parentage rests on a wide array of considerations rather than genetics alone, Love versus Love, providing that the Nevada Parentage Act clearly reflects the legislature's intent to allow non-biological factors to become critical in paternity determinations.
How did Judge Sturman handle the claim that they didn't meet until much later in life, Margaret, not Robert?
Judge Sturman did not see that as an important fact here. The fact is that Robert he gave Joyce his name. She was known for her entire life as Joyce Murray. He took her into his home. He treated her as his natural child. When Mrs. Murray died in 1990, after 40 years of marriage, the obituary that was circulated at the funeral specifically said that Joyce and her siblings were the fruit of the marriage. In 2013, when Robert died at the age of 81, the obituary said that Robert was the sole surviving child. We know that the facts of this case, which are very specific to this, is that we have a child who has been recognized in society as Robert's child. And we also know, and Judge Sturman found this, that Robert Murray never instituted an action during his life to repudiate the paternity. And since he did not repudiate it, parents being the siblings cannot repudiate it. They are time barred. And I would like to address...
Do you have a statute that you would refer to in terms of being time barred in Nevada?
Yes, I would draw your attention to 126.081, which is the period of limitations. Mr. Graham would have this court believe that subsection 2 dispenses with the period of time limitations. This is simply wrong. You have to read the subsection very, very carefully. It says, this section does not alter the time within a right of inheritance or a right to succession may be asserted beyond the time provided by law relating to distribution and closing of a decedent's estates. That's the first premise. This means that if we have a minor child, say a decedent dies and they have a child who's 10 years old, the probate court is going to distribute and finalize that estate. This law is saying it does not alter the time, that we need finality in probate cases. We need to distribute the assets out. And after we have a closing of decedent's estate, that is the time. It's not 21 years anymore. It's the time you have the closing of the estate. As to the determination of heirship, if we look to Judge Ritchie's testimony before the Senate Committee in 2007, Judge Ritchie, in his testimony, states that the determination of heirship clause was included to eliminate the statute of limitations for establishing the parentage of a child who has no presumed, acknowledged, or adjudicated father. That is not the situation here. Since Section 2 does not provide any extension of the time for appellants to file the suit, it is barred. And that is exactly how the courts below analyzed this case. They meticulously looked at the presumptions. We have two presumptions. We have a presumption under NRS 126, giving him his name, holding out the obituary. We have a presumption of the Arkansas birth certificate that had to have been complied with.
But is that an absolute presumption?
It's not an absolute presumption, but then we go back. How do we challenge it? We challenge it under 126. Under 126, we come to standing. Standing does not include siblings. It's very clear. It's mother, it's child, mother, presumed father.
But we have this, I'll use the word errant language in the probate code, as any.
I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor. Stepchild is defined nowhere in the code. We don't know what stepchild means.
Well, not as the stepchild, but the parties who can challenge. I was referring to that language. And not limiting, as the parentage clause would so limit.
Your Honor, even if we were to extend the interpretation of interested parties to siblings, we still go to Section 3, which is the inability to contest because they are time barred. Really, Your Honors, what is before this court is equity, justice, and public policy. Mr. Graham is asking that you overturn and undermine the paternity laws that are standing in the state. He is asking that you say that 126 does not apply to probate. He acknowledges that Title 12 has no mechanism for time limitations, who has standing to prove paternity, and what the basis and test for paternity. He just wants a DNA test to prove that she's not the child. DNA tests do not prove, de-establish paternity, they establish paternity. Intestate succession laws seek to reflect how a person who dies without a will would normally want his or her property to pass. Here, the Murray family estate is the fruit of 40 years of marriage between Robert and Margaret. He died without a will, knowing that Joyce was recognized in the community as his daughter and that the property would pass to him. If he wanted his siblings to have the property, he simply would have done a will. Moreover, Margaret would probably roll over in her grave if she thought that the fruit of her marriage would go to these siblings who detested and disliked her throughout her life. Robert, this is about paternity. We cannot take away Joyce's father. based on mere allegations. We cannot force her to do a DNA test.
Was there any other evidence presented by the nephew or the sister, aside from the fact that they met later in life? Is there any other evidence that we should hear as the appellate court here?
Before the court were four affidavits. These affidavits were mere conjecture. And these of the children that were many, several of the affiants were too young at the time. It was just recollections of what the family knew at that time. But we have before us clear evidence that he gave her his name. He took her into his family. He wrote an obituary. He never contested a paternity. He is time barred. We have to have finality. If we don't use 126 consistently, what we're going to have is illogical, inconsistent results. We are going to have a child who is a child under 126. His or her paternity could be contested, like Joyce, at 62, when the parents are long dead, by siblings. This simply is not right. This is not equity. And this does not comport with the laws of paternity in the state of Nevada and the goal of the state of Nevada to enhance the family.
Nothing else.
Any other questions? All right. Anything further, Ms. Denton?
No, I would just ask that this court affirm the lower court's rulings.
Thank you. Mr. Graham?
Let me ask you the same question I asked her. Besides the fact that you have some evidence presented to Judge Sturman about they met later in life, what other evidence do you have that this is not the child of Robert Murphy and Murray and Margaret Murray?
As has been mentioned, there were four affidavits of eyewitnesses, people who were alive at the time, and have, over the 40 years, understood from Robert that these were stepchildren. But more than that, Your Honor, we didn't have the evidentiary hearing, but as a proffer proof, he went to an attorney and drew up documents. Unfortunately, he didn't sign them. And in those documents, he was treating that Ms. Joyce Slaughter as a stepchild. So in his mind, we see, in his mind at least, that this was a stepchild. Then we go, as Justice Douglas has indicated, then we go to this question of notice. There's no indication on the record that he ever had notice or knowledge that the mother had gotten this affirmed delayed birth certificate. I think it's a misstatement to assume that they went down as a couple to get this document. There's no evidence whatsoever that that is the case. And our request of the file indicated that there was no supporting evidence other than this document alone, which alone would not be enough to satisfy what the statute required in terms of the delay.
Wasn't it the case in Arkansas in 1952 or thereabouts that the law required both parties to approve the use of their name on the birth certificate?
It was not, unfortunately. What it did require was that they present evidence and submit that evidence in a permanent file, which unfortunately we have one document and that's it. So what we have essentially is an attestation of the mother saying what she was asserting, the person she married or was married to at that time. And we understand why she did it. She wanted to protect the children from the injuries of the illegitimacy. We understand her motivation.
Well, setting aside that document, I don't think there's any dispute that Mr. Murray held Joyce out to be his daughter for many, many years. And under St. Mary's, that's a presumptive child under those circumstances.
The exception to that is how the father treated the stepchild. In other words, did he say this is a stepchild, or did he actually go to the extent of opening that up and saying this is just my child? He wouldn't assert on the one hand that this is my stepchild to family and friends, and on the one other side say this is my actual child. There is in fact evidence to show that he treated them as stepchildren, and as long as he was doing that, I think qualifies under Title 12.
If we affirm Judge Sturman, there's no will contest. Am I correct? Or
that's correct.
Because of res judicata,
yeah.
There'd be no further litigation. It'd be over.
Right, and the question is how the court will then deal with that, because we open up a Pandora's box. We have real birth certificates, which have a lot of safeguards, midwives, doctors, witnesses, etc., there, and we have notice to the father. You have relations with this person 9 months ago? At that point, if that Mary Jane is holding a baby in her arms, you're on notice that that might be your child. In this case, we have evidence that says they didn't even know each other and that he didn't have any notice. There is no evidence indicating he had notice. So simply taking another person's name is done all the time. It's done as a matter to protect feelings, to protect persons' identities, histories, etc. Unfortunately, Title 12 is not very emotional about relationships. It doesn't matter. If you have a good relationship with your neighbor, it doesn't mean your neighbor is going to inherit. If you have a stepchild that's expressly excluded under Title 12, and you have a wonderful relationship with that child, it doesn't mean you inherit. How many times do we see in probate court people that are quote-unquote undeserving receiving inheritances? Title 12 is about the legislature weighing who should get property and passing it on to who they believe is the most credible in terms of who should receive that, and that is bloodline, and that is adoption. A delayed birth certificate under these circumstances is something different than a birth certificate because it's not a live birth, and it's something different than adoption. And I might add, NRS 127 goes into great detail about inheritance and adoption. We see no such language under paternity. There is no such thing in the state of Nevada as equitable parentage. The equitable parentage is completely annihilated when the legislature says no stepchildren. Any other questions, Your Honor?
Thank you, Mr. Graham, Ms. Denton, for your argument. Ms. Cho, we appreciate your appearances here today, and the matter will